You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Juliet in Georgia. Juliet, thank you for the email. And this is actually about children who are struggling with their bathroom habits. So enuresis and encopresis. And when a child is either having accidents throughout the day or specifically having accidents in the playroom, and how to handle that from a child-centered perspective, how to help parents navigate that, just kind of the whole gamut of dealing with children that are having toileting accidents. So let me read parts of the question for you, and then I'll share some thoughts. I have a question about young clients with potty issues. I have quite a few clients ages 4 to 9 who all struggle with using the bathroom on themselves. I've specifically had sessions where a client will poop their pants in the playroom, and I struggle how to navigate that, maintaining child-centered, but also trying to transition them out so they can get cleaned up. I guess I'm also wondering if you've ever worked with kids who have these struggles and how you navigate it both in session and with the parents who might be feeling pressure to have their kids fully potty trained. All right, Juliet, thank you. And I guess let me start with, yes, of course, I've worked with kids that have struggled with this. I actually feel this is probably one of the most common things that we see as far as one of the factors of kids' control. And I'm going to dive into that in just a minute. So yes, lots and lots of kids that either have accidents just universally in lots of environments or specifically in the playroom. And we'll kind of look through all of those things. So And interestingly, Juliet, that you posed this question, we've been talking about this in the CCPT collective as well. So several other therapists in the online community also raised a question similar, and we discussed it on the Zoom call and in the forum, and we've been processing that as well. So this is obviously a very common concern and question, so I appreciate you writing in. All right, so let's start with, what do we know about the things over which children have control? There are only a handful of them. And it's eating, sleeping, toileting, and obedience. So when we understand that kids feel that much of their lives, almost all of their lives actually, they have zero control and they have very little power afforded to them, so they will often take control wherever they can get it, and that often comes in the way of bathroom accidents. So sometimes it's the opposite as well. Let me throw this out. This is kind of a side turn, but it's important. Sometimes kids will refuse to go to the bathroom even when they need to. So they will intentionally hold their urine or their feces. That is also a control issue. That is also part of the same underlying root. However, in therapy, because emotions are involved, it usually ends up being the other way, that they're having accidents. So I just want to make it very clear, even kids that will refuse to use the bathroom, same root, and we're kind of dealing with a different manifestation of very similar underlying issue. All right, so when we see enuresis and encopresis, and we either have parents report that that is an issue or it's happening in the playroom, we can link it to control first and foremost. We can link it to high levels of anxiety often, and we know that it's somatic in nature. So those are our three big level things that we need to be considering when we have a child dealing with these issues. There's a control factor, there's almost always anxiety involved, and it's somatic in nature. For those of you that might not be familiar with the word somatic, that is the body's emotional, physiological reaction. In other words, emotion is driving what's going on, but there is a physiological reaction in the body. Similar to racing heart, sweaty palms, lump in the throat, pit in your stomach, all of those are also somatic reactions. So the body is showing you and telling you what emotion you are experiencing in that moment. And it's usually very high, elevated levels of that emotion. So somatic symptoms are very closely linked to big feelings in kids. So how do you deal with it if it happens in the playroom? Let's start there. There are kind of two camps or two schools of thought on this. So I will throw out both and then I'll share with you how I handle things. So one is you notice that the child has gone to the bathroom on themselves. So their pants are either wet or you can smell or you can see that they've had an accident in the playroom. There have been times when urine has literally dripped down the child's leg onto my floor. I mean, then it's very clear that they are having a bathroom accident. Sometimes their pants will all of a sudden be soaked and you realize, okay, they've had an accident. We've had kids that have pooped themselves in the playroom and you can smell it. You can see their either diaper or underwear bulging from the feces. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that this happens. My therapist, I was actually not in the office this day, but my therapist and office manager reported that there was a child that had loose stool so badly that he started pooping himself in the playroom. They got him out into the hallway and it was literally running down his leg, dripping all over the floor. It was an absolute nightmare. And I'm not trying to be gross, but I'm trying to let you know, if you've not had a child that's had a bathroom accident while playing with you, you will. it's not a threat. It's not to scare you. It's just, you need to be prepared because it will inevitably happen. Unequivocally, you will end up with a child that has an accident with you in some way, shape, or form. So we need to really have an understanding of what's best practice, what to do, et cetera. So I'm circling back to the two options. The first is you notice that it happened and you bring it up to the child almost as in an observational commentary. So, oh, it looks like you might need to use the restroom. It looks like your pants might be a little bit wet. Or it looks like you might need to go to the bathroom. It looks like you might have something that you need to go check on and take care of in the bathroom. So you can bring it up, but it has to be completely neutral. It has to be judgment-free. It has to be a comment as just as if you were saying, oh, it looks like you spilled chocolate ice cream on your shirt, right? So your emotions cannot get in the way when you bring something like that up. And inside you might be going, oh my word, what a nightmare. What am I going to do? What's the mom going to think? Okay, so you might be spiraling internally, but what is presented to the child needs to be completely calm, completely neutral, and you state it as a fact, just like you would state anything else. That is one option. The other option is if the child does not say anything about it or does not bring it up, neither do you. And there are child-centered play therapists that would say both are within the model, and you could fall on either side of that fence. I personally have erred on the side of bringing it up to the child because I used to have leased office space. Now, obviously, in my own building, it's different, but I used to have leased office space with carpet. And the idea of a child sitting on someone else's carpet and getting poop or pee or whatever on the carpet, then that just becomes a cascade effect of all kinds of issues. So I, at that point, decided I would just gently acknowledge what I thought had happened and address it. It's almost like, you know, the elephant in the room needs to be talked about, right? So as long as you bring it up neutrally and factually and as if, you know, it's really no big deal at all, it doesn't create any kind of shame or embarrassment or guilt. I mean, yes, of course, there's probably all of those things for the child, but you are doing everything you can to minimize that reaction because you're stating it as a very normal fact. All right, so it looks like we might need to go to the bathroom. It looks like your pants might be a little bit wet. It looks like you might need to go and address some things, etc. So that is the way that I typically bring that up. Here's a veteran trick that you need to be aware of that I learned the hard way and we've just implemented ever since I had a scenario unfold in my playroom. So I had an older girl. She was actually a twin, and she was probably eight or nine. So, I mean, we were way past the bathroom accident age range, right? And I still to this day think that it truly was just somatic because she didn't even indicate that there was anything going on. I mean, she just peed herself in my session and then realized it and said, oh my gosh, I just peed myself. And she brought it up to me. Well, at the time, I didn't know what I know now. So we go out, and of course, mom's like, no, I don't have a change of clothes. I stopped having a change of clothes when she was three and learned how to use the bathroom. And therefore, there was nothing that she could wear. And she ended up going home in the police pants to my police costume. So in my bathroom, she changed out of her wet clothes and put on the pants to the police costume and went home in those and washed them and brought them back. And that happened several more times. Kids would go home wearing my costumes because they had had an accident and they didn't have anything else to wear. And I realized, Brenna, you can continue doing what you've always done and continue to get the results that you've always gotten, or you could solve the problem. So we bought 5 packs of boys' and girls' underwear. And at one point, we had like 3 or 4 packs of like the little small elastic-waisted cotton underwear. Sorry, cotton shorts. So I'm bringing that up to let you know it is helpful to keep those in storage in your bathroom or at your front desk or in your playroom somewhere, wherever you can keep it, because you will inevitably need them. And then parents aren't as embarrassed. Parents aren't in as much of a bind. You know, if you can give them shorts and underwear to put on, not only can they finish their playtime, but then you can just wrap the wet clothes in a plastic bag, hand it to mom and say, we had a little bit of an accident, et cetera. And, you know, no harm, no foul. So please make sure that you invest in some underwear and short packs. Go to Walmart. And if you're out of the US, whatever your cheapest place you can buy kids' clothes, go and get some like 3, 4, 5 packs of underwear and shorts for boys and for girls and give them out. Don't ask for them back. This isn't like a, hey, I'm loaning this to you. This is, I have these here specifically for situations like this. They're yours to keep. We can keep doing our session, you know, all is well. All right. So what happens to address this with the parents now? If parents come and tell you that it's a consistent problem, and they are mentioning that it's happening at school and at home and in all of these other environments, you're going to have the same conversation essentially that you would if it happened in the playroom. So your goals in that conversation are to reassure parents that it happens, that it was an accident, that it's no big deal. It didn't ruffle you or bother you whatsoever. You were actually prepared for it. You had the underwear and the shorts because these very things happen. That will normalize for them and reassure them that this is just something that happens. Because especially if the child is older, you know, 7, 8, 9 year olds, it's like, they're like, what in the world? Why? And it just like sends them into a tailspin panic. It's your job to help them know that this is completely normal and it happens all the time. They also need to know that it is emotionally driven. And this is especially true if the parent tells you this in an initial parent consultation, for example. Help them understand what the somatic nature of this is. Help them understand how it's connected to control. Help them understand how it's rooted in anxiety. Connect all these pieces together for them because then they have a why. It doesn't change the fact that accidents are frustrating. It doesn't change the fact that they want the child to be able to not have accidents anymore, but they at least understand why it's happening. It's somatic. This happens very consistently. It's tied to control. It's rooted in anxiety. It all makes sense in light of what is going on. And you want to make sure that your reaction and your discussion is calm and emotionless because they will model how you perceive it. So if a kid has diarrhea dripping down their leg and it's pooling on your floor and you have a sense of panic on your face, or if you are freaking out, or if you're going, oh my gosh, okay, if any of those things are happening, parents will absorb that energy and they will think that it was an absolute catastrophic disaster. If you go, oh, okay, we're going to have to get into the bathroom. We're going to have to make sure that you can get on the toilet. If you just handle it neutrally, factually, completely in control and calm, look, inside you might be wanting to vomit, whatever. It is what it is. But outside, you come across as the poster child for calm, in control, confident, I've got this, no big deal. This is just, you know, a day in the life of a child-centered play therapist. Occupational hazard, right? So when that is your vibe, parents absorb it. Very recently, a little boy pooped himself in my playroom. And he eventually told me, I could tell that he had, but he hadn't quite brought it up to me yet. So I was kind of waiting to see how it was going to unfold before I said something. And he tells me, Miss Brenna, I need to go to the bathroom. I think I have some poop. And so we go to the bathroom and he's really little. And so, of course, he tells me that I have to help him up onto the toilet. And then that becomes a whole ethical thing, but that's for a different episode. So mom's in the car. I help him onto the toilet. Then I tell him I'm going to wait outside. Then he tells me he's done and then says, but you have to wipe me because I don't know how to do that yet. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this just keeps getting better. So anyway, again, for a later discussion, but I ended up taking the dirty underwear and the dirty shorts and we put those in a plastic bag, set them up at the front. He changed into new dry clothes. And then when the session was over, we met mom outside. She rarely waits in the lobby. So we met her outside and she sees that he's in new clothes and I hand her a plastic bag and she has kind of this panicked look on her face. And I said, we had a little bit of an accident in the playroom today, but we took care of it. We went into the bathroom. He used the restroom. Got him in dry clothes. These are the wet ones. Just wanted to let you know what happened, but it's somatic in nature and it's normal and it happens pretty consistently and it will even itself out the longer he's in treatment. And she still kind of had a deer in headlights look, but she at least was just like, okay. And then she got in the car and drove away and whatever. So that is your goal, is to reassure and normalize, help them understand the why, help them understand that it will get better. It always does. And I don't say always unless I mean it. You know that. I've never had a child that had somatic issues that didn't get better or resolve as a result of play therapy. It is the outcome that parents are hoping for. They just have to wait for it to emerge. So I hope that that's helpful, Juliet. Thank you so much for the question. And I know many people have been asking that. So very important that we talk about that. So I'm very grateful for you submitting that. If you would like to know more about the CCPT Collective and know what we're talking about in there, what our Zoom calls involve and include, please go to ccptcollective.com. You can give it a free trial, see what it's like. And there is an amazing community of people in there, live Q&A twice weekly with me on Zoom calls. So obviously I'm doing Q&As every Thursday, but you can certainly get quicker, easier access to me if you're in the collective. So I'd love to have you in there. And a huge thank you to all of you that have joined. I'm just so excited for that space and for what is happening in there. All of you supporting each other and answering each other's questions and sharing experiences together. That's exactly what I had hoped for when I created that space and you all have made it happen. So huge thank you to my active collective members. You have made that a really, really special, engaging, warm, welcoming environment. And that just makes me smile. So I'm really appreciative for all of you that have poured into that. All right. Love you all. Hope you have a lovely weekend and we will talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.